Hey everyone, welcome to Food Not Bombs Sydney podcast. I'm your host, Daniel, and we hope you've been enjoying our previous episodes. Few announcements: we've moved our serves to Campbelltown Memorial Rest Park on Thursdays, and we are in need of volunteers. So please reach out via our Instagram or Facebook. I'll link it in the show notes if you know someone or if you yourself are keen. And hopefully, we are expanding the kind of things we talk about on this podcast. So we're also very open to any of the feedback from listeners. Today, I'm very fortunate to be joined by fellow volunteer Izzy. I've had the pleasure of meeting Izzy and gotten to know a little bit about her, but this is also selfishly an opportunity for me to get to know you, Izzy. So thank you, first of all, for the bravery of jumping on. And yeah, very keen for our chat.
Yeah, same. Thank you. I really appreciate that. That was very sweet. And I also appreciate you saying it was brave because I am actually now nervous. Yeah, that felt good to hear that. So thank you.
Absolutely. And it's nice as well to hear some people's stories. I know in the midst of kind of volunteering and serving, there's a bit of a rush. We don't get to know people or where they've come from. So as a starting point, how did you first come across Food Not Bombs?
I learned about it like 2 years ago, over 2 years ago now, from friends that who were involved in it, and I met them through like other forms of action. So it was really cute that it, I don't know how yeah it all happened. Yeah, so it was through them, and I did it and really enjoyed it. And then they all left Sydney, and I kind of just kept going and picked up a lot of responsibilities along the way. And yeah, I've been doing it ever since. But yeah, my involvement, it looks quite different now to when I started. But yeah, so that's how I first began.
You were involved in like some protests and other kind of action groups, and there
Yeah.
was like overlapping social circles with Food Not Bombs at the
Yeah.
time.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I was involved in a group that does direct action. I think I won't say who, just for security reasons, but like, yeah, but they're also, very politically aligned with Food Not Bombs and what they do. So I'm not sure how they found out about Food Not Bombs, but yeah, it was through them and it was really cool. Yeah.
Nice. And they've moved on, but you've stayed.
Yeah, they like just, the kind of activists who never stay in one place. Or if they were to settle down somewhere, it's not really ideal to be in Sydney because Sydney is a bit poopy sometimes. So yeah, they've all kind of scattered. And yeah, because I live here, I've stayed here.
And you
Yeah.
mentioned you've kind of picked up some more kind of roles or like organization. Did that kind of naturally like lead to that, or was there kind of a step-by-step process, so you just kind of jumped in whenever you could? How did that kind of go? Like I see there's like a varying levels of involvement people can be in according to their capacity. So yeah, curious, how did it go for you?
I think it was just like my circumstances, which haven't changed that much since I started. I have a car, fortunately, which is very hard for most people to afford. And so I was really lucky to have that. And so I, started driving, did a lot of transport. And I just ended up doing all the roles for a while because for the first year I was involved, the volunteer numbers was definitely much lower than it is now, and it was even harder to, have consistent cooks and serves and stuff. So I felt like, I have the time, I have the resources, I can do it. So I did everything, and then it did kind of get to a point where I was like, yeah, but I did burn out because doing everything all the time can be tiring and stressful, especially someone like me. I stress very easily. So, yeah, that's how it kind of my first year experience of it was. I mean, it wasn't all bad. Like, I had, I've met amazing people. I've, had a good time as well. But it was just a lot at first. And then fortunately over the last year, that's slowly been like, I've been taking on less and less responsibilities, and now can like, not show up at all and not feel this guilt that like it won't happen because of me. So, and this is something I really care deeply about as well, that other people who volunteer don't fall into kind of that trap of like, oh, because I have the time, I can do it, so I should do it. Rather, like I rather it, and I've heard other volunteers say the same, we rather it doesn't happen than people forcing themselves to do it, or it being like stressful and causing them to burn out. Like, we have to take care of ourselves first and foremost. So yeah. And so now I do a lot of like behind the scenes stuff. And I kind of just show up for the food mostly, and obviously the people, but yeah.
Yes, amazing. I was going to ask, like, what kind of has kept you going, and I think it says something that you are returning after like a burnout, as you said, that there's something that kind of keeps the momentum, the commitment going, and also respecting at the same time your capacity and your needs. I think so often we separate our own needs as kind of our energy and our capacity for whatever kind of group that we're involved in, whatever that might be. So it's nice that you're able to hold both your needs and also still be involved, like you haven't kind of completely abandoned Food Not Bombs. So what keeps you kind of with the group, with the movement?
Yeah, so there's like two things. The first one is like politically, it's very much aligned with what I politically like believe and practice and stuff. I think that yeah, I also just really like the potential that we have as a space, as an anarchist space. So I really like that. And just the basic truth that, everyone has the right to free food. And so I really like, yeah, being able to practice that. And then like with any other space I've been involved in, it's always the people like that keep me going, that keep me happy to stay involved. And yeah, so it's the people I've met and will meet that I yeah, find is what brings me back all the time. And like there's some people who I've just grown absolutely in love with in this community, and I'm really fortunate. And so yeah, I think that's what's wonderful about this space. So yeah, and then also just like a big part of why I joined as well is that it's because it's so heavily food involved, the fact that it's vegan really was important to me because I'm a vegan and I'm anti-speciesist. And though individually people aren't anti-speciesist in the space, just like Phenobomb overall, is or wishes to be, practices to be that. And so that's another big thing that's kept me staying, because like, yeah, I personally find it really difficult to be around people and food that isn't vegan. So yeah, that was a big aspect for me as well, for joining and sticking around. So yeah, I guess many, many things, many reasons to stay.
Yeah, the
Yeah.
social connections are so incredible in that kind of space as well, when you have kind of alignment of general values that, you know, all humans deserve food, access to food, and the kind of deeper political values as well are generally shared. But as you said, we kind of have the principles, but we're not prescriptive that everyone must, you know, have these certain beliefs. I'm curious because I don't think we've get that much opportunity in the group chats that go in all sorts of tangents. I'm curious with the political beliefs, like you mentioned, anarchism or anarchy, veganism and anti-speciesism. Maybe for like the newbies in our group, or for listeners who maybe have come across it vaguely or briefly, if you would like very briefly explain, describe what some of those kind of ideologies or stances are.
So I'm like really, really passionate about anti-speciesism, and I would say that, I guess, to understand that with like what is speciesism, and like the most basic way I can describe it or explain it is kind of like, you know, what racism is. So it's that like belief that one race is superior to another, and then that belief is used as a justification for like the, you know, exploitation and murder and all these things towards that race, that supposedly inferior race. And it's pretty much the same, but species. So it's this assumption that our species is superior to other species, and we use that to justify the objectification, the exploitation, the murder, and all that towards other species. And I think like everything is all very linked. Everything's connected. And I think that these inherent beliefs that we have towards other species and the and how and the actions that we how do I say it? Like the actions that we do that those beliefs justify are very much the same to how we treat our own species, like towards those who we think are inferior, whether race, sexual orientation, et cetera. I think it's all very connected. And I am very, I wish to be as consistently anti-oppression, as much as possible in my life. And so it, to me, it made sense that species was part of that, like, the respect towards other individuals who, regardless of whether they were the same species as me or not, was matter to me, and it is important to me. So that's the generalization of that. And anarchy, honestly, I don't really, I just, to me, it's just like this, like, you don't have, you know, no gods, no masters, the classic. We don't have, you know, people don't have, individuals don't have power. You do what you want when you want, kind of thing. You know, you are your own, you choose your own life. You decide, you know, no one else gets to choose that for you. That's kind of it. I might be wrong, you know, if that, in that, whether that's actually anarchy or not, but that's how I see it, in general. So yeah, that's what those political things mean to me. And I feel like that's what I feel like I can practice through Funabom, as well as just creating a community where they're, where everyone's safe. And yeah, whether you believe these the same things or not, whether you wish to live the same life or not, it's still like a space you can come to and just like acknowledge that we all, you know, have the right to eat food at least together. You know, just like a very basic thing, but it's very beautiful, and important in my opinion.
Yeah,
Yeah,
starting
I know
with
if that makes sense.
basic needs and having that. I think the opportunity to hear these kind of frameworks, like what anarchism is, anti-speciesism, and like the space to then link to other anti-oppressive kind of movements, like you said. So I think that, you know, the injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So having that space for not only action and actually helping our local community, but also learning, educating ourselves, and building our consciousness awareness of like how all these things like actually link together. Because we don't often have, I'm not sure about everyone's experience, but from my experience, we don't have those spaces to make all the links and meet people, have social connections with people who might have different perspectives or expertise in different kind of areas. So I think that's one of the beauties of like a space like Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of my favorite things is like learning about all these different things, through people, with people, and also being able to teach people what I know. And yeah, I think everyone has something important to share. So yeah,
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
cool.
That equality as well, of different having that space to listen as well is also quite where I find, especially with a lot of online spaces. So it's nice to have a, you know, a real life kind of in-person active space where we get to have these ideas shared. So yeah, and one of the things that we also kind of deal with it in our work is meaning people who are in socioeconomic disadvantage. So, like I mentioned in a previous podcast with Ezra, not expecting like a single answer, let alone any kind of like academic response here. But with homelessness in Sydney is quite big, and cost of living is getting worse and worse. What do you think would be some of the root causes of homelessness, and what might be some potential solutions that we need?
I don't know if Ezra said this as well, but just capitalism, imagine like a rainbow in the background, the word capitalism. that means no, I think, yeah, there's so many variables that can lead people to no longer have a home or have a safe home, or yeah, to struggle to be able to stay in their home. But I think for like this day and age and for my demographic, especially when I've like seen the stats, like Joe and I did a lot of research for our the talk that we gave. Yeah, surprisingly people, or maybe not surprisingly, it's like my generation people in their like 20s and 30s even who are struggling the most. And it is because of just the like how expensive everything is. That's all it is, it comes down to. It's so expensive to rent. It's almost impossible for people in our generation to buy a house if that's what they want to do, to even buy a fucking car. Like it's, yeah, it's really hard. And often people are just like, it's so bad that people are neglecting themselves because they can just barely survive. So I think that's a big thing. And then obviously it's even worse for those who are in domestic violence situations, like, and it's like either you literally have no choice but to be homeless or like, and or stay in an unsafe environment. There's like all these, yeah, all these things. And it just makes people in those situations, it makes it even harder for them to like be able to afford to live away from such a horrible situation. So yeah, so it's a lot of things, but I think a big one is just money. And I talk a lot about it with my friends. Like I have a lot of friends who live in vans now, because it's just more affordable. And I thought about it myself a lot. But yeah, it still baffles me that like there are people who have a kid and they have a car and they have a house, and I'm like, whoa, that's like how can one afford it? And it's like obviously they've just gotten lucky. I think, yeah, for the rest of us, it's you have to kind of kill yourself like working really hard to be able to, yeah, afford any of that. Yeah, I don't know, my thoughts are kind of scattered around it because it seems like it's pretty straightforward, but I'm sure that it's also super nuanced as well. Yeah, that's
Yeah,
my
there's
cop-out
all,
answer.
I think you've mentioned like the so many different issues kind of intersecting and interacting with each other. Like if you're kind of in a family or kind of relationship where there is DV, then that also lessens your options. And then on top of that, if you are in a different income bracket, so it's just like literally materially impossible for someone to afford a home unless they have like three lifetimes or something, let alone like buying a car as well, as you've mentioned. So I think like shining a light to all these different issues is really important, especially if we're kind of helping people who are homeless. What do you think, apart from everyone volunteering for Food Not Bombs, and like other utopian ideals, what might be some ways that we can address some of these causes, or just homelessness in general? What kind of comes to your mind in terms of solutions?
Yeah, as someone who's never experienced it, I don't think I have maybe much valid points to bring up about it. But like I think just as a community, or as communities, like it would be really cool that we normalize upskilling each other so that we don't have to rely on this system as much. That's my ideal way to combat things like homelessness. So we, teach each other how to grow food, how to cook said food, to share resources amongst each other, just things like that, or like how to source food. without paying for it, as we do well sometimes. yeah, just I think looking out for each other more, and giving more attention, and if you have the means to, resources, money or time or whatever, to spaces who are trying to do that. But yeah, I think relying on each other, and creating, yeah, spaces like that, I think are so important. That's why I like Food Not Bombs. It's kind of just like a chance to try to disconnect from the system as much as possible, and just like rely on one another and rely on other communities, and you all help each other out and stuff like that. I don't know if that will solve homelessness, but I hope it helps maybe those who are homeless to feel, even for a brief time, like they can live a life more. They're able to live their life a little bit more nicely and with comfort and have their needs met,
You said it. I think shout out to Jura Books as well for starting some upskilling workshops. I forgot to mention at the start, but if we can rely more on our communities, our like other groups, like with mutual aid, the kind of practice of reciprocal care amongst ourselves, so we don't have to rely on the system, a system that generally advantages some over others. I think that's definitely a helpful starting point. Not to say that we'll solve all of homelessness in Sydney, but I think there's so many options and opportunities that we can have as a community. You've been involved in Food Not Bombs for over a year then, Izzy, is that right?
Over 2 years now, yeah.
So 2 years, over 2 years now. I imagine there's been some ups and downs. We've already touched on a few, but if you don't mind sharing, you mentioned like we had less volunteers in some instances. I think that's actually news to me because I've only joined and been joining for what, 3, 4 months. So I'm curious, how did you manage at that time? And what were some other challenges that stood out over the past couple of years?
Yeah, so when there wasn't as many of us, the scale was smaller. So I think it's so normal now for us to serve like multiple meals and have like, yeah, so much produce that I think people don't realize. We started off with just a pot. We just had a pot and maybe a basket of two of things. Myself and many others are always trying to remind people like, hey, like it's okay if we don't have a lot. Like, we don't want to be like capitalists where we are like constantly like we have to keep growing. Like it doesn't have to be that way. But yeah, that's like when we had not a lot of people, we just didn't do as much, which was fine too. But the big challenge with something like that is it can be extremely stressful when those who are consistent volunteers, they take on a lot. Like myself, I took on a lot of responsibility. I didn't have to, but it's in my nature to, and as a result I burnt out. And I think that's like very easy to happen. Maybe not as much now that we have so many more volunteers, which is great. So that's a bit of a challenge of maybe volunteers getting stressed or overwhelmed or burning out. And obviously it's up to them to be able to like navigate that and make sure. But I think also it's important we like remind each other and look out for each other as well. So it's a bit of both. But yeah, other challenges. I think like, what else have I did make notes so I don't forget anything. But I think a big one is transport. But like we talked about earlier, it's so hard to afford a car. And so it's, those who do have a car, like there's not many, and like it also depends a lot on if they can even help on this other day. And like, yeah, so transport's a big one that we still struggle with to this day. And I have thought like maybe we should just all like get bicycles or something. But yeah, and I think the last things that have come up of recently, which I think has been talked about in a previous podcast, is like navigating antisocial behavior, mostly by people coming into the space to get food. Yeah, that's I think tricky, especially because we really don't want to like control people and tell people what to do. Like that is not, at least that's what I don't believe Funa Bombs is. Like we do not have like a hierarchy of people to boss the people below them around. We don't like, yeah, it's the whole point is everyone has autonomy, including the people who come and take food. So it does make navigating tricky situations harder. And I think like with the previous, like with our recent issue around it, people like volunteers learn about just actively talking to, you know, the regulars and reminding people to create, keep the space nice and comfy. Just like, yeah, I think the intent to like just first talk to people, interact with them, get to know them. I think that's really, I think admirable. Like Ezra did that a lot. Shout out to him. And I think that's really beautiful. So trying to connect with people first and foremost. But yeah, yeah, I find that's really tricky. So that's the challenges I can think of, at the moment. Also, this is like maybe not as serious or big of a challenge, but we're still connected to the system. Like we still, have to buy stuff, from shops and stuff, but I don't think that's too urgent, or as serious as some of the other challenges. But yes.
We haven't yet seized the means of production for containers that and plastic
Yeah.
production
Yeah.
that might take some time. But yes, I definitely have kind of seen the ways that an autonomous kind of anarchist group deals with things like antisocial behavior. Like there's a inner cop in me that would have like this very simplistic kind of hierarchical like rules imposed on others, but then it goes against the anarchist principles. So I think like for all the people involved, I think it's quite great to see this role modeling of how we would kind of organize and deal with conflict and conflict resolution within that space whilst respecting people's autonomy rather than kind of having rules imposed upon people and then creating like this divide. I think that's one of the beauties of being able to not have this kind of class divide or have a space where at least we can blur the lines between servers and people being served. And like you said, connecting with people, getting to know the community is one of the ways that we can manage that, not only short term, but long term. And yeah, it's also enlightening to hear that you just had like a pot and a couple of like baskets of produce, because I can't imagine that. In the
Yeah.
current like setting, so I think yeah, that's really humbling to hear for I'm sure other volunteers now, with the amount of produce that we can source. So yeah, it takes away some of the maybe some of the stress and expectations that we might have.
Yeah, I hope so.
And as you mentioned, like checking in with people, what are some other ways that you managed the I think a lot of us want to kind of take on responsibility, or we can also feel stressed when maybe we're not doing as much as we think we can. If you don't mind just sharing like how we can manage as a collective. I think you mentioned like checking in, making sure no one's taking on too much. That's one of the things that comes to mind. Is there anything else that you'd add?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, other than checking in and just reminding people, like making it understood that, like everyone, yeah, make sure everyone understands that they don't have to ever get to that point. You know, we're a community, we're not a business. You know, it's okay. It's like, I think, and honestly, this is to myself, I say this to myself a lot. I have to remind myself this constantly. Like, it is okay if it doesn't go to plan. It's okay if we're running late. It's not ideal. You know, we don't want to make it a habit, but like, it's not the end of the world. It's, for me, it's like, I got to say, you know, it's not that serious. You don't have to stress. I don't know how many other volunteers feel this way as well. But yeah, I think just I taking things less seriously and trying to have a bit more fun with it. And if you're finding that's hard to do, then maybe consider changing the role you do or like, I don't know, just chatting to people and being like, hey, how do you go about this and not have a mental breakdown every time? Because that's something I had to learn to do. Yeah, and I personally, when I notice someone's taking on a lot of roles or they do a like very time consuming role, like transport, or like diving as well, that happens late at night. I mean, some people don't care about going to bed early. I just kind of, keep an eye out on those who I keep seeing on the roster. And especially if they're doing multiple roles every week, just like maybe give them a nudge and be like, hey, how are you feeling about doing all this? Is it a lot for you? But yeah. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know what else to do to prevent it. I have been thinking about it. I've been thinking about this a lot, like for a while, of also just doing self-care workshops, just normalizing self-care in our like in the community, and normalizing people being selfish. I think it's, yeah, I've been learning this year to just be like, I don't want to do it. I can do it, but I don't want to. So that's a good enough reason not to do it. So yeah, I mean, maybe people disagree, but I think I would love if, yeah, people lived more like that, because I feel like you should, yeah, you should do what makes you happy. And even if it's like it's a for a good cause, it's okay. Like it's not gonna combust if, for 1 week it doesn't go to plan. So yeah.
Yeah, and creating the conditions so that that load is shared. So I think it's like a two-way thing where the person who is experiencing the stress has self-talk and ways of recognizing when they can step back and rest. And that form of rest is like self-care, self-preservation for the long term. Because if we want a long-term kind of social, political justice revolution, whatever you want to call it, it's not going to come overnight. So we're in it for the long, long game. And then also on the other side, people around that person can check in as we've been talking about and ask questions and recognize, as you said, if there's a someone that's always on the roster for multiple roles, maybe if you give them a bit of like verbal permission that hey, you can rest this week or what if you share that role with someone else today so yeah, I think that we can rely on our community for that support and that care. So that's that communal self-care.
100%. Yeah.
And that self-care is like a it's a it's rest is resistance is one of the kind of mantras I've been seeing. And looking into some of the history without going on a random tangent about self-care and Audre Lorde, a black feminist author that talked about it. I think that once you understand where self-care came from and then how capitalism co-opted and industrialized it within the wellness industry, then you can really understand that, oh, it's actually self-care is a part of what we do as a
Oh, for
kind of mutual
sure.
aid
It's,
supportive group.
yeah, I love that shit. I love learning about it and talking about it. Self-care is one of my favorite things, yeah, to talk about. And yeah, it is super fucking radical to take care of yourself, which is insane, but it's, yeah, it's true. It's to be
Literally.
lazy is fucking radical, and it's, yeah, to rest and choose yourself over money or whatever it is, yeah, it's all these radical things. And yeah, but it's super important.
Have you heard myths, misconceptions, maybe within the circle or within like other overlapping, like social activist circles, or even outside circles, like misconceptions about food not bombs? Maybe I'm always in two minds about, reactionaries and like entertaining reactionary ideas. But yeah, what are maybe some common misunderstandings, misconceptions that you've come across over the couple of years with food not bombs?
Honestly, the only one I could think of is that I'm aware of, is that we're a charity, which has come up as well, in previous talks, like for sure. And I can understand why on the outside looking in, we come across as a charity, why people come to that conclusion. It's like, oh, people are giving away something to homeless people. Oh, they're a charity. So, which I guess is why it's super important to create a welcoming environment and one where people feel comfortable to talk, so that we can have conversations where we can explain why we're not a charity and why it's so much more, in my opinion, deeper than that and political, more political than that. So yeah, I think that another thing is maybe because of that, we're being perceived as a charity. People who want to reach out and volunteer often, this is like very minor thing, but as someone who like responds to messages of people wanting to help out, people like take it really seriously, which is, I think, I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think it's kind of funny. They're like, I get messages of people being like, I've had this many years experience and I'm qualified in this. And I'm like, girl, it's so much more chill than that. It's so funny. But yeah, I think like, yeah, that's a minor misconception that we're like a very serious organized thing when we're not. We're so fucking all over the place, but it's great.
Organized chaos. And I think that charity model, I'm not sure about your experiences, Izzy, but with some charities, they require a commitment. So I see some of those messages myself, and I'm like, oh, no, damn the charity NGOization of this kind of care work is frustrating because that's a kind of expectation within charities that, you need a commitment, you need to be there. But yeah, it's not capitalist work. Here, we're all very flexible and accommodating to different needs as well. Like maybe that's helpful for listeners to know.
I hope so. There's definitely been cases where people have said they couldn't come physically. Like, what are, non-physical ways to help? And to be fully transparent, I've struggled to like keep up with people like that in like how to help them feel like they can still contribute, without helping out in person. But maybe that's something I can think about how to be better at. But yeah, I also think that the whole perceiving us as a charity, but also just probably as a general how we grow up and operate as humans in this society is just like this always, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but like always waiting to be told what to do. So like there's always this expectation that there's someone to tell you what to do, and you're always waiting for someone to give you instructions. And I hope that we can try and also make it more normal for people to realize that they can be, that they are fully autonomous. Like, yeah, there is no one to tell them what to do. And I think, like, I again understand why people, think and behave like that. And I don't think it's a misconception. I think it's just a, yeah, behavior thing. But it's a bit off topic. But yeah, I kind of wish also there was less of that. But I think it's just something we have to unlearn together as well.
I think that's like a societal thing that we're so used to hierarchies from schooling, as that we kind of expect, there to be a boss or a manager or some kind of leader dictating like what we should be doing. I think it's so rare and to see that kind of horizontal power within anything, within any group, literally. I can think of friendship groups that are very hierarchical, but like, yeah, so there's so many different ways of contributing. I mean, hopefully this is an example of me just putting an idea in a group for a podcast and just doing it, with obviously, respecting any dissents and opinions. But like, there's space for expressing like your strengths and doing workshops and like you mentioned, a self-care workshop or a cooking workshop or dropping leaflets in the community. Like there's so many different options for people to contribute. And maybe there are also some ways that we can think of about contributing, whether that's like online activism, sharing things or creating posts, like marketing or online like website help. Like there's so many other things that people can do apart from just like physically being there. So yeah, I think there's so many options once we step beyond the charity model and just go with like a mutual aid and that autonomy that people aren't used to. It opens up so many opportunities.
And it's exciting. And yeah, like this podcast being an example, it's so fun. And yeah, again, exciting to just see the things people come up with and how people wish to contribute. Yeah, and that's why I hope this space continues to be is like a safe space for people to do that, to be able to, live out their dreams of how they want to help Food Not Bombs.
What messages would you like to send to those who maybe are interested, maybe have come across Food Not Bombs for the first time very recently, and they're interested in like volunteering, reaching out? I think we covered like you don't need your CV or resume. You don't need a commitment. It's all good. Any other like messages you'd like to send to listeners who are interested in volunteering?
That's pretty much like one of the main things as I like to make clear to new volunteers especially is like you're making it like clear that it is completely up to them, or it's like completely up to you to on what you do and like how you help and how long you help. If you want to do one of the roles that are like part of the cook and serve, you can come and go as you please. There's never any obligation to do anything you don't want to do. As long as you just like communicate, that's all you need. That's all we need is just communication. And you can, do whatever you like. You can just rock up for the food and chat. That's what I've been doing a lot of time. That's totally fine. Like, yeah, just like really emphasize how chill it is, how much autonomy you have over just like how you use the space, how you wish to contribute, how you wish to show up as yourself. As long as you're respectful and of the people and of the principles of Food Not Bombs, I don't see any issue with that. And like I said earlier, have fun if you like, but then also have serious political talks too. Like, I think it's a great space for that, and I really love that. I've been able to have so many interesting talks with people because of just how different everyone is, but also not, kind of all different but same. And like, yeah, just like share things about yourself if you want to and your passions and like, yeah, I don't know, embrace the diversity of the spaces and hopefully feel comfortable being your unique self too. Like that's all I hope for with people. They just feel comfortable and safe to be themselves, to be who they want to be, and contribute how they wish to. So yeah.
That space to be creative and diversity is like so cool and such a strength in the space that we have. And if people are unsure, they can always message our Instagram or our Facebook, and we can kind of answer questions. I think maybe if people are unsure, we can always like make suggestions, or you can also just pop in to one of our serves and observe, check it out, see if it's your thing,
Yeah,
and see
you
how
can
you could,
shadow.
yeah, shadow. That's also an opportunity that we've had. And then for our current volunteers, what are some kind of messages that you'd like to share?
Try not to speak to go on too much of a tangent, but I like as we've spoken about, I think three things I just really like want everyone to know who helps is to take care of yourself, please. Like if you don't feel like doing something, if you don't want to do something, that's valid. Just say you just express that and like it's good, like if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you need space, like do that. Like whatever you need, because your needs come first and foremost. You're like, no matter how great the cause is, whether it's in this space or any other space, you matter just as much. Your needs matter just as much. And I say this because I come from activist spaces where people are like, no, the animals, for example, are going through something worse. So how I'm suffering, how I've been traumatized, or how I feel doesn't matter. And I've seen what it does to people's mental health, and I don't want that. And I see it in environmental movements as well. I see it in every movement, people neglect themselves because they're fighting for something so important. But yeah, I want people to know at Food Not Bombs that they are just as important, if not more, because what is Food Not Bombs without them? Yeah, community care is a big thing, I think. And second point is that your voice matters. It sounds cliche, but I think some cliches are true, and I think this one is. I think, yeah, it doesn't matter whether you have been someone who's been helping out for months, for years, or you've just been lurking in the chat this entire time. If you have something you want to express or an opinion you want to share, whatever it may be, or even just a meme in our group chat, you know, like, yeah, your voice is just as valid as anyone else's. Because I do see people sometimes being like, oh, like I, you know, don't really do much, but like here are my thoughts. And I'm just like, no, it matters just as much, you know. And then lastly, just thank you, you know. I just two simple words, but yeah, it's like still I got to express my gratitude for everyone. I appreciate everyone who's part of the community. Like the people who, you know, bring food and a speaker and a mat, you know, to our meetings, like Julie and John, and people who like respond to emails and messages on social media, to help with all that. And like, people who spend their nights putting up posters. I don't know if actually I should be naming people, but yeah. So people who like, you know, travel over an hour, like Jane helps so much with transport and stuff, and they live like I think over 40 minutes away. And people who make podcasts like you and who make badges and who give talks and share memes. It's just like all these things on top of just the known roles that are involved in making Funnot Bombs happen. I'm just like grateful for everyone who's helped in that and in every other way that I've, you know, not met, brought up. But yeah, it just fills my heart with joy. So yeah, I just want people to know that like what they do is noticed and is appreciated and it matters. So yeah.
Yep, in a world of disconnect and multiple crises happening at a time, I think I share that gratitude with having that space. So yeah, that what is Food Not Bombs without our community? So I think that's really important. Yeah, strong words. And now using imagination, utopian imagination, if you'd like, whatever, wherever you'd like to go, in 3, 5 years time, what might be a dream, your dream for Food Not Bombs?
So the maybe annoying thing is I don't usually think that far ahead in life, in my own personal life as well, which is for reasons that which I could go on. But so my response is less about what it looks like because I think that that could just yeah I think I want to stay reminded to that and be fluid with how whatever direction we go, but how it feels like, I do hope it feels and continues to feel like an empowering, fun, safe community. Yeah, and it feels like a space, the space that we do take up, you know, every week is like a little utopia for those couple of hours that we gather together. At least that's what it feels like to me sometimes. So yeah, and I hope for those who need it, it feels like, you know, a home, it feels like family, and it feels like hope. So that's what I dream of for Food Not Bombs.
Keep that fun, empowering atmosphere and a little bit of color to people's days, evenings. I think that's really great. And I can definitely see that continuing on with people like you, Izzy, and people like all the people that you've mentioned. I think we're nothing without the community. Is there anything that I missed from our chat today? I'm sure this won't be the first and only chat for any final thoughts or words to share?
No, I think I've like word vomited all my thoughts and feelings. Yeah, I think that's all I got for now.
Perfect. Amazing.
Yeah.
And also shout out for listeners, our first podcast, Izzy and Joe did an amazing job. So do check that one out for a bit of background and history. And Izzy, it's an absolute pleasure to have someone like you in the community. I'm saying this personally. I really appreciate all the hard work behind the scenes that you do. And you definitely add that fun, creative elements, and it's really appreciated. And I think people need to mention that a bit more in general with sharing appreciation and gratitude. So thank you, Izzy. And yeah, until the next chat.
Well, thank you so much. Oh, I'm gushing.